Welcome to WITCAST, the podcast of the Women Inside Trade Network, an international organization that contributes to the empowerment of women and seeks to address a gender gap that still exists in Brazil and in the world when it comes to international trade.
We are delighted to have with us today Anabel Gonzalez. Anabel has participated of our podcast before. This is a special podcast episode together with ICC Brazil. So I have here also Gabriela Dorniak. We are going to split the questions we have for Anabel today. And thank you so much, Anabel, for taking the time, making the time for this. Just a brief introduction on Anabel. A large CV, but Anabel is the WTO Deputy Director General since June 2021 with other three DDGs. Mrs. Gonzalez is a renowned global expert on trade, investment, and economic development with a proven managerial track record in international organizations and the public sector in government. Ms. Anabel Gonzalez served as Minister of Foreign Trade of Costa Rica, Special Ambassador and Chief Negotiator, Vice Minister of Trade and Director General for Trade Negotiations. She also worked as Director General of the Costa Rica Investment Promotion Agency and also served at the World Bank as Senior Director of the Global Practice on Trade and Competitiveness. More recently, Anabel was a senior fellow, non-resident fellow for the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C., where she hosted the very successful series Trade Wins. So, Anabel, we are delighted to have you here with us today. We organized, as you know, two questions, or maybe three questions, that we would like you to address in this 20 minutes episode. So the first question we have for you, Anabel, is what are the priorities for WTO reform and MC12? We have seen a series of speeches and declarations on a menu of issues requiring attention. These not only included tackling new issues like climate change, pandemic response, and the digital economy, but also ensuring the WTO can better address matters that have been on its negotiating agenda for years, such as agriculture, disciplines on fishery subsidies, and special and differential treatment for developing and least developed countries. At this time, according to what you have been following regarding the members' negotiations, what is the near to materialization at the MC12? Are there meaningful structural reforms within the organization also being discussed? The floor is yours, Anabel.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Renata. And first of all, thank you very much for this invitation. I am delighted to be here with you. We know that MC12 is less than a month away, and WTO members are working hard to achieve tangible outcomes in three key areas. First, a deal on fishery subsidies, which is a litmus test for the WTO's credibility as a forum for negotiating multilateral agreements. The chair, Ambassador Santiago Wills of Colombia, has been leading a continuous process of negotiations, and in the coming days, members will intensify their discussions even further, basically to bridge remaining gaps on some important issues, such as special and differential treatment. An agreement in this area would demonstrate that the WTO members can negotiate multilaterally, and it would also show that we can contribute to the Sustainable Development Goals and support efforts to protect the health of our oceans. And I think it will make a very important difference to the long-term livelihoods of more than 40 million people in coastal communities who earn their living from fishing, and for poor people who rely on fish as their main source of food. Second, MC12 must deliver on trade and health. We have seen how trade and the global trading system have been forces for good throughout the pandemic, enabling access to critical medical and food products and helping drive the economic recovery. Take, for example, trade in medical products. Even as the value of world trade in goods fell by almost 8% in 2020, trade in medical products rose by 16%, and trade in personal protective equipment grew by nearly 50%, and trade in face masks by over 480%. What's more, every day, hundreds of specialized inputs to produce COVID-19 vaccines are traded back and forth along tightly knit supply chains that often crisscross 12 or more international borders. So trade, backed by the stability and the predictability created by the WTO, is helping to bring essential vaccine inputs to where they are needed, so that we can get the 1.5 billion vaccine doses being produced every month off the production line, out of the factory gate, and into people's arms. So we must build on these successes, and the WTO has been helping members to coordinate their trade policy responses to the pandemic. And we've also been working with the manufacturers to monitor supply chains and identify bottlenecks that impede access to vaccine inputs and uncertainty to vaccine delivery and add uncertainty to vaccine delivery timeframes, increasing the cost of vaccines. Now, alongside those efforts, WTO members are busy working on a ministerial declaration on trade and health. The goal here is to keep supply chains open and running, not only during the pandemic, but during this pandemic, but during future ones as well. The areas that are being considered include facilitating trade, dealing with export restrictions and tariffs, and improving cross-border collaboration between regulators. Trade negotiators are also considering how cooperation between the WTO and other international organizations could expand vaccine manufacturing capacity in developing countries. Now, another aspect of this discussion, which is more difficult to resolve, relates to intellectual property. Members are trying to find a pragmatic and meaningful solution on a proposal to waive WTO rules on intellectual property in a way that promotes equitable vaccine access and preserves incentives for innovation at the same time. And third, WTO members also want to see an outcome on agriculture at MC12, although different members have different views on how ambitious such an outcome should be. A possible package on agriculture could include food security and transparency, along with a post-MC12 work plan to address domestic support, public stockholding for food security purposes, and other issues where gaps appear too wide to bridge before MC12. Now, WTO members will also need to find ways forward on a wide range of WTO reform issues, though some are too new to expect movement in the weeks ahead. A minimum reform agenda must strengthen the organization's three core functions: monitoring, negotiations, and dispute settlement functions. And it must put, of course, development at its core. Now, the most immediate priority is fixing the dispute settlement system. Members have set out several proposals on this and other aspects of reforming the WTO. Some touch on totemic principles like special and differential treatment for developing countries. Others seek to build on what some people have called the real jewel of the WTO crown, that is the day-to-day work of the committees like the TBT and SPS committees to promote transparency and resolve trade frictions arising from regulations in a pragmatic and cooperative way. And yet other reform ideas relate to the support that governments provide to their industrial and agricultural producers and concerns about the impact of support on competitive neutrality. Now, WTO members need to engage in good faith with each other if they are going to make progress on this and other difficult topics. A first step on this and other reform issues will be to find agreement among all members on how to move the reform process forward. Now, moving on to some of the initiatives that groups of WTO members have been taking forward on issues directly relevant to the future of trade, I think the most advanced of these trilateral initiatives is on services domestic regulation. Here, 65 WTO members are within touching distance of finalizing an agreement that would address many of the practical challenges that affect the ability of service providers to operate in a foreign market. The agreement contains a set of disciplines to make the process of obtaining authorization to supply a service more transparent, predictable, and free of red tape. An outcome here would be very significant. Trading services has been growing at more than double the rate of trading goods for several years. And today, services represent nearly one half of the value added of global trade. So an agreement in this area could save businesses as much as $140 billion per year in G20 countries alone, providing a boost not only to services sectors, but to all sectors of a modern economy, from manufacturing to agricultural to clean energy, all of which depend on services to remain competitive. Now, a closely related area of work is investment facilitation. In today's interconnected and digital world, promoting investment has become synonymous with promoting trade. And that's why more than 100 WTO members, 105 at this moment, are working on an agreement that will make it easier for investors to invest, conduct their day-to-day business, and expand. An agreement here would improve the overall business climate for investors, unlocking much needed finance to meet the sustainable development goals. Now, another key 21st century issue is the digital economy. And here, 86 WTO members are negotiating an agreement on digital trade. The agreement would facilitate electronic transactions by setting out common rules on e-signatures, e-contracts, and e-payments. It would also define disciplines on spam, online consumer protection, and other key issues to improve trust by consumers and businesses alike. Negotiators are also trying to find common approaches that promote global data flows and allow governments to address data protection and security priorities at the same time, arguably more challenging topics. Now, groups of WTO members in Geneva are also looking at how the WTO can make a difference in supporting the world's efforts to tackle climate change and other global environmental challenges, though these initiatives are fairly new. One group is considering areas such as promoting trade in green goods and services, reducing inefficient fossil fuel subsidies, and strengthening the capacity of the poorest countries to grasp the potential trade benefits of the low carbon transition. Another possible area of work is to foster dialogue and cooperation to ensure that increasingly ambitious and much needed climate policies do not result in trade fragmentation and trade tensions. Those tensions can easily end up undermining predictability and certainty for green businesses and investors. Another group of WTO members is also considering how trade cooperation can support the fight against plastic pollution and promote trade in recyclable and biodegradable plastics. Now, on inclusive trade, last year, a group of 91 members agreed on guidelines for enhancing access to market information and trade data to include small businesses in regulatory development, to cut red tape, and to improve access to trade finance, where small businesses face much higher rejection rates than larger businesses. So helping small businesses, which account for 95% of companies and employ some 60% of the global workforce, connect with regional and global value chains would extend the benefits of trade across more people. So, to conclude, a successful ministerial meeting would comprise concrete outcomes on a handful of issues, along with good progress on the others, including outcomes that would put the WTO firmly on a reform path. As the eighth largest economy in the world and both a G20 member and a lead emerging economy, Brazil, of course, plays a critical role in making that happen. And support from Brazil's private sector and other stakeholders is essential to propel the global trading system forward. So I encourage all of you listening to make your voices heard.
Thank you, Annabel. This was a very comprehensive overview of really key issues. Our second question is, what is the role you see the WTO as a global institution playing during not only the MC12, but also in the future in regard to US-China relations, and how this tripartite relation can influence the future of a WTO reform?
Thank you very much for that question, Gabriela. It's a very important one. Let me maybe start by saying that for the past 70 years, global trade has been governed by a set of rules centered on non-discrimination, transparency, and binding and enforceable commitments on tariff and other policy instruments, which have brought greater certainty and increased market openness. And throughout this period, we've seen that an increasingly global framework of trade rules has helped create an unprecedented extent of global prosperity, helping to raise living standards around the world. And many countries have shared into this prosperity, as have many people. And the figures speak for themselves. From 1920 to 2017, for example, developing countries increased their share in global exports from 16 to 30%, helping to cut the proportion of the world population living in extreme poverty from 36% to 9%. Many developing countries, especially those in East Asia, have used trade to create jobs, integrate into global and regional value chains, and reduce poverty. And while without the growing participation of developing countries in international trade and a sustained efforts to lower barriers to the integration of markets, it is hard to see how this reduction in poverty could have been achieved. Now, the high point of global governance was reached in the mid-1990s with the creation of the WTO, where countries committed not just to an expanded and improved GATT, but actually to a new era of global economic cooperation. And since then, the WTO has expanded to become a quasi-universal organization with the accession of China, Russia, Vietnam, and others. And today, it covers over 95% of trade, and it has enhanced the rule of law in trade relations, with over 600 cases being brought to the dispute settlement mechanism and countless additional conflicts prevented. So the WTO has always faced challenges on several fronts, from its decision-making and negotiating process to the scope of its mandate to its dispute settlement process. For example, in the Seattle Ministerial Conference in 1999, a new round was going to be launched, but instead the meeting ended abruptly and in disarray in and outside of the room. Since then, reaching agreement at the multilateral level has become ever more elusive. There have been some successes, as the expansion, for instance, of the Information Technology Agreement or the negotiation of the Trade Facilitation Agreement, and very importantly, the elimination of agricultural export subsidies show. But clearly, it has not been increasing. It has been increasingly difficult to pursue deeper international cooperation, which has resulted in some very old and many new issues remaining unaddressed at the global level. And preferential trade agreements have filled this vacuum to a certain extent, but only partially. So how does the US-China relationship fit into this broad picture? Well, it's clear that China's accession to the WTO was a defining moment in the history of the organization and in the history of China's integration into the global economy. The data shows that China played a major role in the expansion of global trade over the past decades. By 2020, China's goods exports and imports had grown to reach over nine times their level in 2001. And from being the world's sixth largest goods exporter and importer in 2001, China is now the largest exporter and second largest importer. So China's share in global exports went from 4% to 15% between 2001 and 2020, while its share of global imports went from less than 4% to 12%. And of course, we know that China is also a very large player in the area of commercial services trade, both as importer and as exporter. Now, the rapid expansion of global trade created vast opportunities for growth and development, both in China and in the rest of the world. And this really enabled an unprecedented convergence. China and several other developing countries grew faster and began to catch up with richer countries. And poverty, as we said, fell sharply. But those successes did not come without their challenges. Some countries have not shared fully in the benefits of trade over the past decades, and some groups of workers and communities within those countries have had a difficult time adjusting to the rapid pace of change in trade and technology. So the rapid rise of China and other major trading nations has also drastically changed the negotiating and decision-making dynamics at the WTO. And since China joined the WTO 20 years ago, the world has become much more interconnected. So in that world, countries are more dependent on far-flung trade networks and more exposed to risks and shocks. And it causes the effect of policies in one country to be felt well beyond that country's borders. So amid that rapidly changing landscape, the risk is that the major economic powers will be tempted to abandon a rules-based trading system in favor of a power-based trading system. And the last years have provided a bit of a glimpse of that, what that could look like with the US-China trade relations descending into trade confrontations in 2008 and 2019 with tariffs being raised by both members. And this is something that impacts not only, of course, the US and China, but also the rest of the world. A study done by the World Bank documents that the trade conflict between these two countries deepens as the conflict deepens, investor confidence falters, and that impacts also investments into developing countries. So the economic and social impacts of the pandemic, I think, have exposed the urgent need for concerted international action, especially among the largest powers. And without cooperation, including on trade, I see that it would be very difficult to achieve the goals G20 leaders reiterated when they met in Rome recently. That is to vaccinate at least 40% of the population in all countries by the end of this year and 70% by 2022. We know, to conclude, that domestic measures are critical, but they are not enough. In the era of vaccination, as in so many others, we need international cooperation and a revitalized WTO with a strengthened negotiation, dispute settlement, and monitoring functions is in China's and US best interest and in securing the securing the cooperation of all countries in using trade as a tool to tackle mounting global challenges from the pandemic to climate change, to inclusiveness, and more.
Anabel, thank you very much. Again, I think you covered both questions so well. And I think you're right. I think when we look at lessons learned from the past and certainly from the pandemic and looking forward to all the challenges, if there is no cooperation, very little will be accomplished. So I think that's a fantastic message to end this podcast. So thank you, certainly from our side. Renata, any final words from your side?
No, I just would like to echo your words and thank you very much, Anabel, for your support with Women Inside Trade, with our work, either from when you were here in DC and now from Geneva. So thank you very much and congratulations again for all the brilliant work you have been developing over the years, not only now, but over the past years.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Renata, Gabriela, and Marina. It's always a great pleasure to be with you and with Women Inside Trade, and keep up the great work. Thank you.
This was WITCAST, the podcast of the Women Inside Trade Network. I hope you enjoyed our talk and keep following us at www.womeninsidetrade.com.